This time, it is not a matter of politics. It is a matter of the well-being of Hong Kong.
Another weekend of Hong Kong protests and resulting violence. It's Monday, September 2nd. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Indonesia investigates unrest in West Papua. Villagers upset in Indian-controlled Kashmir. The race for the White House narrows. Probing melting ice, finding treasure in trash. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Pro-democracy protesters in Hong Kong blocked roads near the city's international airport as part of another day of demonstrations Sunday. Some flights were canceled and authorities had suspended the express train service to the airport. As Hong Kong surveyed a night of damage caused by government opponents, officials defended police actions as the city became a smoky battleground, stoked by young people battling for democratic change. Police answered Molotov cocktails, bonfires, hurled bricks and roadblocks with water cannons, tear gas, beatings, and at one point, live gunfire. But it was the riot officers' decision to storm two subway stations and beat passengers that outraged most of the residents in the city. Videos were shared widely of police in helmets and gas masks lashing pedestrians and riders inside a train in Prince Edward Station and then soaking four cowering people who pleaded and wept. Elsewhere, posted video showed a riot officer standing guard over three detained medical volunteers in yellow vests emblazoned with red crosses. Government officials said police were justified in their actions. The number of participants was far smaller than most protest weekends, in part because police banned a proposed rally and march by a civil rights organization that had organized previous gatherings of as many as 2 million participants. The participants made up for their smaller numbers by using far more violence than previous nights. Among protesters on the streets of Hong Kong are many who are prompted by their religious faith. Christians, like others in Hong Kong, are divided in their politics. But as Mike O'Sullivan reports, Christians in the pro-democracy movement say they hope to be a voice for peaceful change.
A proposed extradition agreement with China has mobilized millions, some in the Christian community. They include a community worker for a Christian organization.
We try to go in around and check over where the police are, and then we try to put this information on the internet.
The goal is avoiding conflicts and the confrontations that have led to injuries, arrests, and tear gas fired in residential neighborhoods. Some pastors and religious workers are involved.
They're also doing what I'm doing is to supporting the youngster, to protect him from the injuries during the movement, and especially protecting from the police.
A prominent Baptist pastor, Chu Yu Ming, was one of the founders of the Occupy Central movement that led to massive protests 5 years ago. Now more Christians are involved, with major churches expressing concern and individual Christians joining protests and rallies.
People here, they may not agree to all the protesters on what they did or what they are going to do, but at least they are standing on their side, trying to support them.
Hong Kong's embattled chief executive, Carrie Lam, is a devout Catholic at odds with many of her faith. In the past, many Christians have been on the sidelines.
But this time, it is not a matter of politics. It is a matter of the well-being of Hong Kong. So if that anti-extradition law is being passed as law, that any of us can be, arrested and then being sent to China. It is a huge, it's a very acute sense of insecurity.
A Christian hymn has become an unofficial anthem of this movement. The extradition bill has been suspended but not withdrawn and has sparked a broader range of democratic demands during 12 weeks of protests. Pastors and church workers are mediating as Christians urge reform in Hong Kong. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Violent Hong Kong protests meet violent police response. Dozens arrested in Indonesia in Papua protests. This time, Trump's tariffs will hit U.S. consumers. Experts say muted U.S. criticism of North Korea's missile tests emboldens its weapons program. Australia plans to rescue at-risk native fish. VOA Asia Facebook is where you'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more. You can also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Indonesia is investigating incidents that led to widespread violence in the territory of West Papua, days of unrest and protests followed by racially charged incidents in two cities involving alleged abuse of Papuan students. Nova Perwadi narrates this story by Yuni Salim.
After days of unrest in West Papua, the Indonesian government's decision to shut down the internet has not only caused an information blackout, but also drawn attention to the potential for human rights abuses in Indonesia's easternmost provinces.
Jakarta has essentially shut down the internet in Papua. I don't know if they learned it from the Indians in Kashmir or the Kashmir or vice versa, but it's a similar kind of strategy. Embarrassing things are going on. The instinct is to, you know, keep the outside out from looking in and learning of them rather than, you know, remedy the situation.
The unrest began when military officers and nationalist militia allegedly used racial slurs against Papuan students in two East Java cities, Malang and the provincial capital, Surabaya. Indonesian police are also accused of using excessive force against a group of students accused of desecrating the country's flag. News of the event sparked unrest hundreds of miles away in West Papua, which has always been a flashpoint of the separatist movement, and outbreaks of violence are common. Indonesia's ambassador to the United States, Mahendra Siregar, says these new protests pose a threat to national unity.
We from the government of Indonesia strongly regret that incident. And the president has instructed all relevant government agencies to investigate and prosecute to the full extent of the law those who have committed those violations. Because to be clear, our country is so diverse. But actions like those perpetrated have no place in our nation.
The unrest has created a resurgence of calls for Papuan independence, and government officials laid blame for the unrest on separatist leaders like Benny Wenda. He told VOA he had nothing to do with this most recent outbreak of separatist violence.
What happened occurred while I wasn't even there. I was across the Pacific and had just returned to the UK. This is just their justification to divert attention. The Indonesian police and military, what they do is stigmatize and racially discriminate. They defend their own conduct by blaming others. But politically, I'm a leader that wants to bring my people out of Indonesia.
But he also says that people in West Papua are victims of this kind of racial discrimination on a daily basis.
I think that's the military and police. They say words like "you're a monkey" repeatedly, which creates a sentiment in all of the Papua region that demands a referendum. If you consider us monkeys or animals, then we are not part of Indonesia.
The Indonesian government has ordered the national police to investigate the allegations of racism against Papuan students and sent at least 1,000 soldiers to West Papua to help deal with the ongoing protests. For producer Yuni Salim, I'm Nova Purwadi for VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, the Taliban has launched an attack on a second Afghan city in 2 days amid a ninth round of negotiations with the United States on ending the war. Officials in Baghlan province said insurgents were on the outskirts of the provincial capital, while a Taliban spokesman said fighters had entered the city. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia.
More
We're glad to have you with us today as we begin a new week on VOA Asia. While millions of people continue to live under a prolonged security lockdown in Indian-controlled Kashmir, villagers near the border on the Pakistani side of the disputed territory complain intensified military skirmishes between the two countries are also impacting their routine life. Ayaz Ghul reports from the border town of Chakoti.
Residents and shopkeepers in this poverty-stricken border area say military clashes have escalated since early August when India revoked constitutionally provided autonomy for its part of Kashmir. Until a month ago, around 200 students used to come to this Islamic school in the Chakoti border area in Pakistani-administered Kashmir. But less than a dozen are here now.
Parents are terrified due to the exchange of fire and they have stopped sending their children to the school. So certainly education activities have been badly affected.
Most of the people here are also outraged at Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi for altering the status of India's only Muslim majority region.
Modi is being really unfair to them and subjecting them to the worst kind of oppression. They have been confined to their homes and are hardly left with any food because it has been more than 24 days now.
The Indian action to cancel the special status for Kashmir was accompanied by a wide-ranging curfew and communications blackout. Thousands of people, including political leaders and activists, have been arrested without being charged. Kashmiris have protested in response, but the Indian government defends its action in Kashmir as important for the region's development. Pakistan is demanding India reverse course. On Friday, tens of thousands of Pakistanis took to the streets in solidarity with residents of Indian-administered Kashmir. Speaking at a rally in Islamabad, Prime Minister Imran Khan vowed to stand with the Kashmiris until they get freedom.
Kashmiris are passing through testing times. We fully share their pain and sufferings.
Pakistani military officials reject Indian claims that militants are attempting to infiltrate the border to fuel trouble in Indian Kashmir. The town of Chakoti, until recently, used to bridge Indian and Pakistani Kashmir via the Friendship Bridge. But for now, that bridge is empty because Pakistan has ordered the route closed. Ayaz Ghul for VOA News, Chakoti, Pakistani Kashmir.
Coming up, there are fewer Democrat White House hopefuls. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello anytime you're online or on your smartphone. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime.
This news from VOA Asia. As Hong Kong surveyed a night of damage caused by government opponents, officials defended police actions as the city became a smoky battleground as young people battled for democratic change. Police used water cannons, tear gas, beatings, and at one point, live gunfire. You can visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for this and many more stories. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, the lineup is now set for the next Democratic presidential debate in September. A total of 10 Democratic contenders qualified for the debate in Houston, Texas. That'll be on September the 12th. That's half the number of the previous two debates that were held over two nights. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more on who is in the next debate and what it means for the race to pick a Democratic presidential nominee.
Former Vice President Joe Biden, the current frontrunner, based on a variety of public polling, heads the list of Democrats who qualified for the third presidential debate.
Now we got to put the country back together again. And it's not going to be enough just to have defeated Donald Trump. That will get the biggest impediment out of the way. But we have to unite the country. We have to bring the people together again.
For the first time, Biden will be on stage with a key rival, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. Warren has been rising in the polls with a promise of bringing sweeping change to the country.
We're not going to fix that with one little statute over here or a couple of regulations over there. The only way we fix that is with big structural change. You ready for some change?
Also on stage will be Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who continues to battle Warren for second place behind Biden.
We're not talking about utopia. We're simply talking about a nation where people live with dignity and security, and that is something we will achieve together.
In the America we believe in.
Also qualifying for the September debate are California Senator Kamala Harris, South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg, New Jersey Senator Cory Booker, former Texas Congressman Beto O'Rourke, Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, former Housing Secretary Julian Castro, and entrepreneur Andrew Yang. For those contenders who did not qualify, it's a major blow, says Susan Page.
With a big field like this, it's hard to break through so that people notice you and can even think about whether they want to support you. If you can't make the debate stage, it just gets harder.
New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand was among those who failed to qualify, and she quickly decided to end her campaign.
But it's important to know when it's not your time and to know how you can best serve your community and country.
The Democratic Candidates Debate. The increasingly tougher qualifying standards to make the debates is beginning to sort out the Democratic field, says analyst Darrell West.
That field is going to start to shrink as we head into the fall and as we get closer to Iowa. There are probably going to be about a dozen candidates that get taken seriously.
When our kids are watching today.
Among those failing to qualify for the next debate were Montana Governor Steve Bullock, Hawaii Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, and environmental activist and billionaire Tom Steyer. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
This news from VOA Asia. About 2 million people living in India's northeastern state of Assam face the unnerving prospect of becoming stateless as authorities wind down a mammoth process to identify illegal immigrants. Their names did not appear on an updated citizens register published on Saturday. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, scientists warn that Greenland's melting ice sheet is a real doomsday scenario. Rising temperatures and record heat this summer accelerated what has already been a much faster thaw than seen in previous years. VOA's Arash Arabisadi has more.
Sometimes modern problems call for classic solutions. This rebuilt DC-3 plane, originally constructed in 1942 for the Second World War, now flies missions helping NASA scientists research one of the biggest threats to human survival.
So each one of these giant blue boxes is filled with probes, which we're dropping into the ocean and using to measure just how much the oceans are warming and how that affects the ocean.
Josh Willis is lead scientist for NASA's Oceans Melting Greenland, or OMG, project. He and his team are researching which is the bigger threat to glaciers, warmer air above or warmer waters below.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, drop, drop, drop.
They do that by dropping probes into the ice.
Probe to start talking back to the plane, and we have a signal that means the probe's alive.
Next comes observation.
It's gone all the way down to 700 meters, and it'll probably go to 8. It might even go to 1,000. A few of these fjords are that deep.
Scientists say this ice sheet today melts 6 times faster than it did 20 years ago.
We're literally watching the Greenland ice sheet disappear right before our very eyes. And this is having an impact all around the planet. We all share one ocean, so 1 billion tons of ice lost here raises sea levels all across the world by a measured amount.
Measuring that amount is the whole point of the study.
If it happens at a rate where we're looking at many feet of sea level rise in the next 50 or 100 years, then it's going to have a huge impact for cities all across the planet. Billions of people live near the sea and will be affected by this rise. And in fact, they're already beginning to be affected today.
The OMG project is currently in the fourth year of its five-year mission. Scientists say if the world stays on its current path, climate change may ruin life as we know it. Just recently, amid concerns of rising sea levels, Indonesia announced plans to move its capital from Jakarta to the island Borneo. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
New York City garbage man Nelson Molina has been seeing value in other people's garbage for the past three decades. And for years, he's been saving unique items that their owners threw away. Vladimir Lensky met with the unusual collector.
One man's trash is another man's treasure, the saying goes. And for Nelson Molina, it's his life philosophy. For the past 34 years, the former New York City garbage man has been finding gems in trash and has a collection of items that tell the story of East Harlem.
This was high tech when we were kids. This is an 8-track. When I first found it, it worked. So when I had it in the garage, I would put it on. I would put my Frank Sinatra music, and I would put it on and play while I'll be working or cleaning some of the pictures up and everything.
When Nelson Molina retired, he went from garbage man to full-time collector.
I have these sensors that I know when I pick a bag up that there's something in there valuable or something fragile. So instead of picking up the bag and throwing it in the truck, I pick it up easy.
And when Molina decided to display his collection of 44,000 found treasures, what better place than a giant garage on the premises of the New York City Department of Sanitation? And part of the collection even found its way to a museum organized by Open House New York.
The idea behind the exhibit is to really highlight the histories in New York City, that particular magic in New York City history that's very specific to neighborhoods and particularly the people in the neighborhoods and communities. One of the oldest pieces in the exhibition that includes 300 objects from Nelson's 45,000 objects dates to 1901, and I believe it's a passport from an immigrant from Germany. Mm-hmm. So it tells you a lot about the people who were in the vicinity.
Also in Molina's collection, personal portraits, some of them over 100 years old, documenting a century of New York families.
All these photos all found, all different times. They got photos here from 1901, 1935, 1939 and everything. You got a diary here from 1922, another one here from 1920. I couldn't read the writing on it.
There are bits and pieces of history and pop culture, complete works of Molière published in Paris in 1810, and a toy slide projector with slides from Batman still in it. Toys have always been special for Molina.
I had two brothers and three sisters. We didn't get much for Christmas. So what I would do before Christmas, I would go out. I had like 3-block radius that I couldn't pass. And I would go out a week before Christmas and look in the garbage and pick up all the old toys that people throw out. So when I came home with this little bag, my siblings, my brothers and sisters, it was like Santa Claus coming home.
Molina believes people are throwing away too many good things that can still be used.
Look at sustainability. He has a very sort of waste not, want not approach to seeing the world. And I think that any New Yorker, any person can come away with it and hopefully reconsider their waste habits and think a little bit more about their own consumption and how they can reduce that a little bit.
Molina believes his collection belongs to the city. After all, the city's trash is municipal property. But the ability to see beauty and treasure where other people see just garbage, that's all Molina. For Vladimir Lensky in New York, NRIs, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on the radio throughout Asia on many great radio stations like PSU Radio Patani FM 107.25 at Prince of Songkla University in Thailand. We thank everyone there who's tuned into our program today and invite you back for much more. We'd also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Carl Starling. Managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Ira Melman and Keith Lane. And thanks to Michelle Liu for getting us onto Facebook today. If you were hearing our stream, it's courtesy of her. We thank her. We also thank you. Come back and see us again tomorrow for more VOA Asia. Have a great day.